You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Harmony of the Creative Word, the Human Being and the Elemental, Animal, Plant, and Mineral Kingdoms, formerly known as Man as Symphony of the Creative Word, revised translation by Matthew Barton, Collected Works, Volume 230. This is Lecture 2 of Part 1, and Part 1 is entitled Man's Connection with the Cosmos, the Earth, and the Animal World. And Lecture 2 is given on the 20th of October, 1923. Having considered in the lecture yesterday the nature of the animals of the heights, represented by the eagle, the animals of the middle region, represented by the lion, and the animals of the earth's depths, represented by the ox or cow, we can today turn our attention to man's connection with the universe, to the particular aspect which shows how the inner organization of the human being relates to these representatives of the animal world. Let us first turn our gaze to the regions of which we said yesterday that when the animal derives its particular forces from them, they really cause the whole animal to become head organization. There we see how the bird owes its very nature to the sun-irradiated atmosphere. This sun-illumined atmosphere is a necessity, for the bird receives from it everything, we might say, that it is able to receive by virtue of the fact that it owes its essential existence to this atmosphere. And I told you yesterday that it is on this that the actual formation of plumage depends. The essential nature of the animal lies in its external features, as it were. What the outside world makes of it is embodied in its plumage. But when the influence of the sun-irradiated air is not impressed on the creature from without, as in the case of the eagle, but is activated within, as in the case of the human nervous system, then thoughts arise. Momentary thoughts, as I said. Thoughts of the immediate present. When we thus turn our gaze, weighed down, one could say, by all the results from such contemplation, upward to the heights, it is to the tranquil atmosphere and to the streaming sunlight that our attention is drawn. We must not, however, think of the sun in isolation. The sun maintains its power through the fact that it comes into connection with the different regions of the universe. Human perception of these connections has resulted in relating the sun's activities with what is known as the zodiac, so that when the sunlight reaches the earth from Leo, from Libra, or from Scorpio, this always means something different. It also means something different for the earth if the sun's light is strengthened or weakened by the other planets of our planetary system. And here, different relationships arise in regard to the different planets. The relationships to the, in quotes, outer planets, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn, are different from those to the, in quotes, inner planets, Mercury, Venus, and Moon. If we now consider the organization of the eagle, it is most important, first of all, to observe how far the sun forces are modified, strengthened, or weakened, by their interaction with Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars. It is not for nothing that legend speaks of the eagle as the bird of Jupiter. In general, Jupiter is considered to be representative of the outer planets. And if we were to draw a diagram illustrating what is meant here, we would have to draw the sphere which Saturn has in the cosmos, and also those of Jupiter and Mars. Let us draw this so that we may actually see it in a diagram, the Saturn sphere, the Jupiter sphere, the Mars sphere. We then show the transition to the Sun sphere, giving us, in the outermost part of our planetary system, the interaction of Sun, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. And when we see the eagle circling in the air, we do in fact utter a reality when we say, the forces that stream through the air from the sun, in such a way that they are composed of the interaction of the sun with Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn, are the forces that live in the whole configuration, in the essential nature of the eagle. But at the same time, they live in the form that has arisen as the human head. And when we place man in the universe, in accordance with his true reality, on earth he is only, so to speak, a miniature image of himself, we must place him in the eagle sphere as regards his head. We must therefore think of the human being in regard to his head as belonging to the eagle sphere. This is the aspect of the human being that is connected with the forces in the upper sphere. The lion is the representative of the animals which are in the real sense sun animals, in which the sun unfolds its own special force. The lion prospers best when the planets above the sun and the planets below the sun are in a constellation where they exert the least influence on the sun itself. Footnote, presumably so-called superior and inferior planets. Editor, end of footnote. Then those special characteristics appear, which I described to you yesterday, namely that the forces of the sun itself, penetrating the air, produce in the lion a breathing system of just such a kind that its rhythm is in perfect balance with the rhythm of the circulation, not in a numerical sense, but as regards its dynamics. In the lion this balances itself out in a wonderfully beautiful way. The lion regulates its circulation through the breathing, and the circulation continually stimulates the stream of the breath. I told you that this can be seen even in the form, in the very shape, of the lion's mouth. In this form, the wonderful relationship between the rhythm of the blood and the rhythm of the breath is actually expressed. One can see this too in the remarkable gaze of the lion, resting in itself and yet looking boldly outward. But what lives in the lion's gaze lives also in the organization of the human chest and heart, in the rhythmical organization which connects with the other elements of human nature, the metabolic and the head system. And if we picture unconstrained sun activity, we must put the human being into the diagram in such a way that we place his heart and lungs in the region of this sun activity. It is here in this sphere that we have the lion nature in man. When we turn to the inner planets nearer the earth, the inferior planets, we have first the Mercury sphere. This has to do in particular with the finer parts of the metabolic system or organism of man, the region where foodstuffs are transformed into lymph-like substance and then taken over into the circulation of the blood. Progressing further, we come into the region of Venus activity. This is connected with the somewhat coarser parts of man's metabolic system, to that part of the human organism which works primarily from the stomach on the foodstuffs which have been consumed. We next come to the sphere of the moon. Parenthesis, I am drawing this in the sequence customary today in astronomy. I could also draw it differently. Close parenthesis, and there is a diagram. There we enter the region which exerts influence on the metabolic processes, for these are connected with the moon. In this way, we have placed man within the entire universe. By turning our minds to the cosmic activities which the sun carries out in conjunction with Mercury, Venus, and Moon, we come to the region containing forces which are taken up by the order of animals represented for us by the cow, in the sense which I spoke of yesterday. There we have what the sun cannot do by itself alone, but what it can only do when its own forces are conducted to the earth by means of the planets nearest to the earth. when these forces are all at work, when they do not only stream through the air, but penetrate the earth's surface in various ways. Then they work upward from the earth's depths. And what thus works from the depths belongs to the sphere, which we see embodied outwardly in the organism of the cow. The cow is the animal of digestion. It is, moreover, the animal which accomplishes digestion in such a way that there lies in its digestive processes the earthly reflection of something actually super-earthly. Its whole digestive process is permeated with an astrality which reflects the entire cosmos in a wonderful light-filled way. There is, as I said yesterday, a whole world in this astral organism of the cow. But everything is based on gravity. Everything is so organized that the earth's gravity works there. You have only to consider that a cow is obliged to consume about an eighth of its weight in food each day. Man can be satisfied with a 40th part and remain healthy. Thus the cow needs earth's gravity in order to fully meet the needs of its organism. This organism is designed for the gravity of matter. Every day the cow must metabolize an eighth of her weight. This binds the cow with its material substance to the earth. Yet through its astrality, it is at the same time an image of the heights of the cosmos. This is why, as I said yesterday, the cow is an object of so much veneration for those who follow the Hindu religion. The Hindu says to himself, the cow lives here on the earth, but through this fact it creates in physical matter, subject to gravity, an image of something super-earthly. It is indeed the case that man's nature is organized in a normal way when harmony is established between these three cosmic activities, which manifest in a one-sided way in eagle, lion, and cow. When the human being is the confluence of the activities of eagle, lion, and cow or bull. In accordance with the general course of world events, however, we are now living in an age when the evolution of the world is threatened by a certain danger. And this danger will be, if I may so express myself, that those one-sided influences actually come to one-sided expression in human beings. From the 14th and 15th centuries up to our own day, the facts of human earthly evolution are such that, to an ever-increasing degree, eagle forces wish to concentrate one-sidedly on the human head, lion forces on the human rhythmic system, and cow forces on the human metabolism and all human activity on earth. This is the stamp of our age, that it is the aim of the cosmic powers to bring about a threefold division of man, and that each form of these cosmic powers is always striving to suppress the others. The eagle strives to subjugate the lion and the cow and make them of no account, and in like manner with each of the other elements. In our present age, something particularly alluring is working on the subconscious in man. Alluring because, in a certain sense, there is also something beautiful about it. In his conscious life, man today is unaware of this, but in his subconscious, three calls surge and sound through the world, seeking to tempt him with their allurement. And I must say that it is the secret of our present time, that from the sphere of the eagle there sounds down to man what actually gives the eagle his eagle nature, what gives it its plumage, what hovers around it as astrality. It is the eagle nature itself which becomes audible for the subconscious of man. This is the alluring call. Quote, learn to know my nature. I give you the power to create a universe in your own head. Close quote. Thus speaks the eagle. That is the call from above, which today wishes to impose one-sidedness on man. And there is a second alluring call. This is the call which comes to us from the middle region, where the forces of the cosmos form the lion nature, and where, through the mingling of the sun and air, they bring about equilibrium between the rhythms of breathing and circulation that constitutes the nature of the lion. What thus vibrates through the air from the nature of the lion, what wills to make man's own rhythmic system one-sided, speaks alluringly to man's subconsciousness, saying, quote, "Learn to know my nature. I give you the power to embody the universe in the radiance of encircling air." Close quote. Thus speaks the lion. These voices which speak to man's subconscious have more effect than is supposed. Yes, my dear friends, human beings on earth are organized in different ways on earth. For instance, everyone who lives in the West is specially prone to be allured, to be led astray, by the voice of the eagle. Thus, American civilization, on account of the special organization of its people, is particularly exposed to the temptation offered by what the eagle speaks. And Central Europe, which is imbued with much of the culture of classical antiquity, contains so much of what moved Goethe, for instance, to make his Italian journey, a journey which acted on his life like a liberation. Central Europe is particularly exposed to what is uttered by the lion. Oriental civilization is preeminently exposed to what is uttered by the cow. And just as the other two animals give utterance in their cosmic representation, so their sounds upward from the depths, like a rumbling, muffled roar, the call of what lies in the heaviness of the cow. It is truly the way I described to you yesterday, that when one sees a herd of cattle replete with grazing, sees them as they lie there in their own peculiar way, their very form revealing that they are given over to earth's gravity. All this is conditioned by the fact that this bodily form must daily metabolize an eighth of its own weight. And to this must be added that the depths of the earth, which under the influence of the sun, Mercury, Venus, and the moon, bring all this about in the digestive system of the cow, that these depths, as if with demonic rumbling power, resound through such a herd with the words, quote, "Learn to know my nature. I give you the power to wrest from the universe measure, number, and weight." Close quote. Thus speaks the cow. And it is the Orient which is especially exposed to the allurement of this call. But though the Orient is primarily exposed to this alluring call of the cow on account of the ancient veneration of the cow in Hinduism, if this allurement were actually to seize hold of mankind, so that what arises from it gained mastery, then the influences emanating from the Orient would produce a civilization which, spreading through Central Europe and the West, would hinder progress and give rise to decadence. The demonic earth forces would work on earth civilization in a one-sided way. What then would actually happen? The following would happen. In the course of the last centuries, technology, an outer life of technology, has developed under the influence of external science. Certainly our technical progress is wonderful in every sphere. The forces of nature are active in technology in their lifeless form. And the important factors in bringing these lifeless forces into play, so absolutely and utterly that they come to inform civilization throughout the earth, these factors are number, measure, and weight. The scales, the measuring rod, to weigh, to count, to measure, these are the ideal of the modern scientist, of the modern technician, whose entire profession has actually developed on the basis of external science. We have brought things to such a pass that an important mathematician of our times, in response to the question, quote, "What is the guarantee of existence?" close quote, gave the following answer, parenthesis, philosophers of all ages have tried to answer the question of what is actually real, close parenthesis. This important physicist said, quote, "Anything that can be measured is real. Anything that cannot be measured is not real." Close quote. The ideal thing in this view is for everything that exists to be brought into the laboratory and weighed, measured, and counted. From the results of this weighing, measuring, and counting, one construes the things that are accepted as science, which then informs technology. Number, measure, and weight are therefore meant to become the foundation of all civilization. Now, as long as people only use their ordinary understanding to apply measure, number, and weight, things are not particularly bad. People are certainly clever, but they are still a long way from being as clever as the universe. And this is why things cannot become particularly bad, so long as, in comparison with the universe, they go about their measuring, weighing, and counting in a dilettante way. But if present-day civilization were to be transformed into initiation, things would be bad indeed if this attitude of mind remained. And this could happen if the civilization of the West, which stands utterly under the sign of measure, number, and weight, were to be flooded by what might well come to pass in the East, namely, that through initiation science, people might fathom what actually lives spiritually in the organism of the cow. For if you were to penetrate into the organism of the cow, burdened with earthly heaviness, with this eighth of its weight in foodstuffs, with all that can be weighed, measured, and counted, if you were to learn what is being organized spiritually in the cow by this earthly gravity, if you were to learn to understand the whole organism of the cow as it lies in the meadow digesting, and in this process of digestion manifesting wonderful revelations from the astrality of the universe, you would also learn how to make what can be weighed, measured, and counted into a system with which you could overcome all other forms of civilization and impose on the whole globe a civilization which would do nothing but weigh, count, and measure, making everything else disappear. For what would result from initiation into the organization of the cow? That is a question of utmost gravity, a question of immense significance. What would be the result? Well, the way in which people construct machines, for instance, varies greatly according to the nature of the machine in question. At present, machines are still imperfect and primitive, but everything tends toward the gradual development of a kind of machine that depends on oscillations, in which oscillation, vibration, and sequential motion produce the machine's effect. Everything is tending toward such machines. But if machines can be constructed that function together in the way that can be learned from the distribution of foodstuffs in the organization of the cow, then the oscillations produced by the machines on earth, these small earth oscillations, will be such that what is above the earth will oscillate in harmony with what is happening on the earth. Then the movements of our planetary system would be compelled to oscillate in harmony with the Earth's system, just as a string tuned to a certain pitch vibrates in sympathy when another one is struck in the same room. That is the terrible law of oscillations, sounding in unison, that would be fulfilled if the alluring call of the cow so seduces the Orient that the East would then be able to wholly penetrate the unspiritual, purely mechanistic civilization of the West and Center. It would then become possible to create on the Earth a mechanistic system engineered to precisely match the mechanistic system of the universe. Everything connected with the activities of the air, of the environment, and everything connected with the activities of the stars would be exterminated from human civilization. What human beings experience, for instance, through the cycle of the year, what they experience through living together with the sprouting, budding life of spring, with the fading, dying life of autumn, all this would lose its significance for them. Human civilization would resound with the clattering and rattling of oscillating machines, and with the echo of this clattering and rattling, which would stream down to Earth from the cosmos as a reaction to this mechanization of the Earth. If you observe a part of what is active at the present time, you will say to yourselves, a part of our present-day civilization is actually on the way to having this terrible element of decline and fall as its goal. Now turn your thoughts to what would happen if the center fell prey to the allurements of what is spoken by the lion. It is true that the danger I have just described would then not be present. Mechanization would gradually disappear from the face of the earth. Civilization would not become mechanistic, but with one-sided power, man would be given over to all that lives in wind and weather in the cycle of the year. People would be yoked to the year's course, and thereby compelled to live particularly in the interaction of their rhythms of breathing and circulation. They would primarily develop what involuntary life provides, that is, chest nature. Through this, however, such human egoism would overcome Earth civilization, that everyone would be intent on living for himself alone, and no one would bother about anything save his own immediate well-being. That is the temptation to which the civilization of the center is exposed. Such is the existence which could hang like fate over the civilization of the earth. And, yet again, if the alluring call of the eagle were to seduce the West, so that it would succeed in spreading its way of thinking and attitude of mind over the whole earth, binding itself up in a one-sided way to this kind of thinking and attitude, then in humanity as a whole, there would arise the urge to enter into direct connection with the supersensible world, as this once was in the beginning, at the outset of Earth evolution. People would feel the urge to extinguish what man has won for himself in freedom and independence. They would come to live only and entirely in that unconscious will which allows the gods to live in human muscles and nerves. They would revert to primitive clairvoyance. Man would seek to free himself from the earth by turning back to the earth's beginnings. For exact clairvoyant vision, all this is further emphasized through the fact that one continually hears within one what may be called the voice of the grazing cow, which says, quote, "Do not look upward. All power comes from the earth. Learn to know all that lies in the earth's activity. You will be the lord of the earth. You will perpetuate the results of your work on earth." Close quote. Yes, if man were to succumb to this alluring call, it would be impossible to avoid the danger of which I have spoken, the mechanizing of the earth's civilization. For the astrality of this animal of digestion wants to make the present enduring, to make the present eternal. From the lion organization proceeds not what wants to make the present endure, but rather what would make the present as fleeting as possible, what would make everything a mere sport of the continually repeating cycle of the year, and would spend itself in wind and weather, in the play of the sunbeams, in the currents of the air. And civilization too would take on this character. If, with real understanding, one contemplates the eagle as it soars through the air, it appears as though it were bearing, in its plumage, the memory of what was there at the very inception of the earth. The eagle has preserved in its plumage the forces that still worked into the earth from above. It can be said that in every eagle we see the past millennia of the earth. With its physical nature, the eagle has not touched the earth, or at the most only for the purpose of seizing its prey, and in no way for the satisfaction of its own life. To fulfill its own life, the eagle circles in the air, because it is indifferent to what is developed on the earth, because it takes joy and inspiration from the forces of the air, because it actually despises the life of earth and wishes to live in the element in which the earth itself lived when it was not yet earth, but in the beginning of its evolution was still imbuing itself with heavenly forces. The eagle is the proud creature that would not partake in the evolution of the solid earth, which withdrew from the influence of this solidifying process and wished to remain united only with the forces which were there at the inception of the earth. Such are the teachings given to us by this threefold representation of the animal kingdom, if we can conceive it as an immense and mighty script written into the universe for the elucidation of its riddles. For in very truth, every single thing in the universe is a written character, if we could but read it. And especially when we can read their connection, we understand the riddle of the universe. How full of significance it is when we realize what we do, when we measure with compasses or measuring rod, when we weigh with the scales, when we count, this is in fact only the assembling of something fragmentary. It becomes a whole when we understand the organization of the cow in its inner spirituality. This is what it means to read the secrets of the universe, and this reading of the universe's secrets leads to understanding the being of the world and of man. This is modern initiation wisdom. It is this which at the present time needs to be said out of the depths of spiritual life. It is difficult indeed for human beings to be human today. For if I may put it so, confronted by the three animal forces, man conducts himself like the antelope in the fable which I told you yesterday. What strives to be one-sided takes on a correspondingly altered form. The lion remains lion, but it wishes to have the other animal representatives metamorphosed into fellow beasts of prey. Thus, for what in truth is eagle, it substitutes a fellow beast of prey, the hyena, whose nature is to live on what is dead, on that element of death which is produced in our head, and which continually at every moment contributes atomistic particles toward our death. So the fable replaces the eagle with the hyena which consumes decay. And in the place of the cow, in line with the decline I have referred to, the lion puts its fellow beast of prey, the wolf. Thus we have another threefold animal group in the fable, the lion, the hyena, and the wolf. And when today there are three contrasting, alluring calls, cosmic symbolism, one can say, manifests this contrast. The eagle gradually sinks to earth and becomes the hyena, and the cow no longer desires in its holy, patient way to be an image of the cosmos, but becomes the ravening wolf. And now we can translate the legend with which I ended my lecture yesterday from the old African version into one of modern civilization. Yesterday I narrated this legend from what may be called the African point of view. The lion, the wolf, and the hyena went out hunting. They killed an antelope. First the hyena was asked to divide the prey. It apportioned it according to hyena logic and said, quote, a third for everyone, a third for the lion, a third for the wolf, a third for me, close quote. Whereupon the hyena was consumed. And now the lion said to the wolf, you divide it. So the wolf said, quote, you get the first third because you have killed the hyena, and therefore the hyena's share is also your due. The second third is yours too, because according to the verdict of the hyena, you would have had a third in any case, for each of us was to have had a third. And you get the last third as well, because of all the beasts you are the wisest and bravest. Close quote. And the lion said to the wolf, quote, who taught you to divide in so excellent a way? Close quote. The wolf said, quote, the hyena taught me. Close quote. The logic is the same in both cases, but in its application to reality, something quite different results according to whether the hyena applied the logic or the wolf with the hyena's experience. It is the application of logic to reality that matters. Now we can also translate this fable into what I may call the version of modern civilization and tell the story somewhat differently. But please note that I am always speaking of what really matters in the whole great process of civilization. Thus expressed in modern fashion, the story could perhaps run as follows. The antelope is killed. The hyena withdraws and delivers a silent verdict. It does not dare to arouse ill feeling in the lion. It withdraws, delivers a silent verdict, and waits in the background. The lion and the wolf now begin to fight over the body of the antelope. They fight and fight until they have so severely wounded each other that both die from their wounds. Now the hyena comes and consumes antelope, wolf, and lion, after they have entered into a state of decay. The hyena is the image of what lies in the human intellect, the element in human nature which kills. It is the reverse side, the caricature of eagle civilization. If you feel what I wish to convey by the Europeanizing of the old African fable, you will recognize that these things need to be rightly understood at the present time. But they will only be rightly understood when man learns to oppose the threefold alluring call, the call of the eagle, the lion, and of the cow, with what he himself should utter, an utterance which today should be the watchword in all we humans do to gain in strength in our thinking and deeds. Quote, I must learn your power, O cow, from the language which the stars reveal in me. Close quote. We need to learn not only about Earth's gravity, not merely to weigh, measure, and count, nor learn merely of what lies in the physical organization of the cow, but of what is embodied in it, humbly to turn our gaze away from this organization and up to the heights. Then what would otherwise become the mechanistic civilization of the earth will be spiritualized. And the second utterance of the human being must be, quote, I must learn your power, O lion, from the language which through year and day surrounding life engenders in me. Close quote. Notice the words reveal and engenders. And the third utterance which man must learn is, quote, I must learn your power, O eagle, from the language with which earth sprung life creates in me. Close quote. Thus man must oppose his threefold utterance to the one-sided alluring calls. That threefold utterance whose meaning can bring what is one-sided into harmonious balance. He must learn to look toward the cow, but then, after entering deeply into an inner experience of its nature, turn his gaze upward to what is revealed by the language of the stars. He must learn to direct his gaze upward to the eagle, but then, after deeply experiencing within himself the eagle's nature, he must look down with the clear gaze that the eagle's nature has bestowed on him, and behold what springs and sprouts forth from the earth, and what also works from below upward in the organization of man. And he must learn to be, and he must learn to so behold the lion, that the lion reveals to him what blows around him in the wind, what flashes toward him in the lightning, what rumbles around him in the thunder, what wind and weather in the course of the seasons bring about in the life of the earth into which man himself is yoked. Thus, when man directs his physical gaze upward and his spiritual gaze downward, his physical gaze downward and his spiritual gaze upward, his physical gaze out toward the east and his spiritual gaze in the opposite direction toward the west, when, in other words, man allows above and below, forward and backward, spiritual gaze and physical gaze to interpenetrate each other, then he will be able to receive and understand the true calls, bringing him strength and not weakness. The call of the eagle from the heights, that of the lion from the surrounding world, that of the cow from the interior of the earth. This is what man should learn about his connection with the universe, so that he may become ever more capable of working for earth civilization and of serving its ascent instead of its decline. Quotes, learn to know my nature. I give you the power to create a universe in your own head. Thus speaks the eagle, West. Learn to know my nature. I give you the power to embody the universe in the radiance of the encircling air. Thus speaks the lion, Center. Learn to know my nature. I give you the power to rest from the universe, measure, number, and weight. Thus speaks the cow, Orient. I must learn your power, O cow, from the language which the stars reveal in me. I must learn your power, O lion, from the language which through year and day surrounding life engenders in me. I must learn your power, O eagle, from the language which earth-sprung life creates in me. The end of Lecture 2.